Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
You fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, welcome. Good to see everyone. Happy to be back and excited for the draft next week. Certainly want to thank my personnel staff and the coaching staff for all their hard work, certainly all year round, but especially these last few months and weeks, we've been putting our final touches on the draft board and look forward to Thursday and hopefully adding some more talent to this roster. So with that, open it up and take some questions.
Let's go ahead and start with Pete. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, Brett, curious about this draft in particular when it comes to offensive tackle, wide receiver, just casting a wide net, what you think of those two positions, and then where you think maybe the best value in this class would be.
Yeah, I think the draft in general has some positional depth, although it is funny when we're looking at the numbers and the general consensus is, this is a deep O-line class, or this is a deep D-line class, or what have you. It's not necessarily true for us, I think, sometimes, because like for the tackle position, I think once you get past like pick 35 or 40, most of those guys are gone. So if you're picking in the top 10, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking in the top 15, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking 32 and 64, you got a shot maybe here or there. So I think that goes into, you know, the additional work we put in and putting a strategy together and what guys might be worth a move, depending on how it all plays out and, you know, what other positions are going to provide top end value if say an O-lineman or receiver isn't there. And, you know, do you go corner? Do you go defensive line? I think that there are some interesting pockets there. So I think the good thing is that, like every year, there's a lot of good players, and it's just a matter of working on our board, our system, given the picks we have and the, you know, the potential moves we can make.
We'll go next to Matt Derrick. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Brett. We haven't really got a chance to talk to you since the free agency period started. Mm-hmm. So that was one of my two questions, but that one. What was kind of your take on just everything that you were able to get done, especially, you know, Chris and bringing so many of the guys back on defense and obviously the addition of Hollywood Brown, too. And then I'll have a follow up.
Yeah, so going into the offseason, a lot of work to do and always unique challenges depending on the year and, you know, what your cap situation looks like. When we left Vegas and had a chance to get together before the combine, we were just kind of outlining some different ideas and some thought processes. And one of the things that I think was glaring to us was we were potentially looking at losing most, if not all, of our defensive line. Mike Dana, Chris Jones, Turk Wharton, Derek Nottie. So obviously a huge amount of concern there, especially given how well our defense played last year. I mean, it was one of the top units in the NFL. Those guys have all played together in the system for a long time. So Chris, right out of the gate, was our priority. I wanted to make sure we got him done. And then I think there was a little domino effect there. Had to move with LJ, and we were able to bring Mike Dana back. But I think being able to secure that front with Dana, Turk, Nottie, and Jones was really important to us. Bringing back Drew, Tranquil was important to us. So really focused on, retaining as much of that defense from last year as we could. And then like every year, whether it be free agency in the draft, if there's an opportunity to add a playmaker for Pat, we're always going to be looking for those options, and played it out, so to speak, in some other positions. And I think we were lucky that, Hollywood situation played out the way he did, and think he's going to be a great 1 year addition for us. And he's going to set himself up nicely moving forward. So I think we're excited. And, it's, like I said, every year is different and unique. And I think with the resources we had available, we maximized what we can do this offseason.
You mentioned like the offensive line in particular and the depth in this draft. This organization has made a move before from 27 to 10 to get a quarterback. Could you ever envision yourself going to 32 to top 15, top 10 for a non-quarterback position?
I mean, I can envision myself. I mean, got to get the owner's approval on that. But no, I think it changes every year. And I think we have a pretty good plan this upcoming week. But yeah, I think, listen, every situation is unique. I mean, we have had conversations in the last few years about guys that we consider top five, top six prospects if they were to fall into the teens moving up. And got Clark and Andy involved, and they were all in it, and those situations just didn't work out. So I think that I certainly could see something like that. A lot of things have to fall in place, though, for that to happen. So it'd have to be the probably a specific guy or two, and then probably getting into a landing spot that's not expected. And then if he does get to that landing spot that's not expected, the team is willing to work with you on a trade. That makes sense. So certainly can see it. A lot of things have to happen and fall in place for that to, to see an outcome like that. But I always think anything's possible.
We'll go next to Sam McDowell.
Hey, Brett. Couple of things for you. Just wondering, without asking you to reveal your draft board, just what you think overall of the wide receiver class.
I think it's one of the deeper classes. I think the good thing about the wide receiver position, this is typically every year, is they provide depth really 1 through 5, and there's always pockets of players. I think there's a large group of receivers in the first 50 picks, I think, that we have great grades on. And then I think there's another pocket right behind that. I think that is a positive. I think, corner, there's some depth, middle to later on in the draft. O-lineman, as I mentioned in the opener, it's really good early. And so there'll be a late run on those guys, but it tails off a little bit. I think it's a better defensive line class than we've seen in the past. I think there's some good mid-round depth there. Linebacker, running back's probably a little lighter than years past. So I think O-line, receivers, corners are good hot spots throughout the draft. And that's a good thing because we can use one of each of those.
And then, just based on how last year unfolded, particularly the back end of the draft, I know there were at least a couple teams that weren't excited to deal with you. What's this last week like as far as setting up the potential, if there are guys that maybe you would want to trade up for as the draft unfolds?
Well, we'll see. Typically the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday right before the draft is when the teams do all their call checks, make sure the phone numbers are working for the teams. So we'll get an email list of draft day phone numbers. So we typically do a run through and check with all the teams. And once we do that, it usually kind of spins into just some casual dialogue, hypothetically. And if you were looking to move up or move back, those type of scenarios. So I think we'll do a good job of getting out in front of this and talking to some teams and, you know, seeing where their mind is in regards to value of or their boards or what their, you know, what boards they're working on. A large part of this is just making sure we're all on the same page in regards to what draft boards you're working from, because as you know, Sam, there's tons of boards. Each team has their own boards and in a combination of other teams' boards with historical boards they use. So we typically reach out to those teams early in the week, make sure the phones are working and exchange some ideas and usually just make sure we're all on the same page in regards to what boards we're working off of.
We'll go next to Sarin Petro.
I'll have a follow-up, Sydney, if I could. Brett, in light of what's going on with Rashee Rice, does that make you have to, you know, put some guys like a Tavondre Sweat, who got a DWI in the last week or so, do you have to push those guys off your board more now because of what you're dealing with currently?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we spend a great deal of time on all these players, and, you know, I think we have to look at each individual case independently and just work through it. And, you know, I think maybe subconsciously, maybe it factors a little, but I think that when we stick to our process and, you know, trust the guys that we have around us, I mean, we have a great coaching staff, we have a great personnel staff, we have, you know, a great security team. So we really lean on those guys. And, you know, at the end of the day, I trust the people around me and, you know, they spend a lot of time working on the player and his ability to come in here and be a good person, be a good teammate. And so I think, you know, we try to stick to, you know, what we've done in the past. And I mean, there'll always be some things that factor into ultimately what we decide to do with a guy. But I think sticking to our process, and we've done this now for, you know, a little bit here, and it over the long run, it's, you know, provided us a good blueprint to work off of.
And then kind of a follow up to what Sam had. Since you won the championship, do you find yourself like there aren't as many trade partners? Teams actively don't want to deal with you because they're afraid that they'll be helping the champ?
I think yes and no. I think that if a team, if it can benefit them, I think they're always going to pick up the phone and call and be willing to work. I don't think a team is going to, you know, diminish their ability to do something they really want to do just because it's the Chiefs. I do think, though, that the ability to deal with certain teams, I mean, it's always been understood that if you're going to deal with a team in your division, there's a little bit more of a premium. But I think just some of the AFC teams in general that are consistent playoff performers, I mean, the Buffaloes and the Cincinnati's and the Baltimore's, I mean, it's probably a little bit harder to deal with those teams. And even if they do pick up the phone, I think some of their asking prices are a tick higher. So I think we get hit with a little bit more interest, but I think that there's always a way to make a deal, but I think certain teams will probably up the price up a little bit.
We'll go ahead and wrap up with the last five hands that are up. So Blair, you're next.
Hey, Brett, I think you just touched on this a second ago, and I think we ask you this every year, but the value of the visit, you know, whether it's at the combine or a pro day or whatever, what kind of information do you glean from that and how helpful can it be?
Oh, it's extremely helpful. And I mean, when the guys come in here for the visit, I mean, they're here all day. I mean, they'll start in the training room. They'll go through another comprehensive MRI and meeting with Rick. And then from there, I mean, they get a chance to visit with all of our coaches. And at the combine, we do have a chance to spend some time with these kids, but I mean, it's maxed out at like 15 to 17 minutes. So you get a chance to get a brief intro, a little bit of an idea of their background, and you get into some football, but it's not very long. So I think just having the whole day and getting to know the person, understand the person more, talk through things, talk through football, talk through their upbringing, all that kind of stuff is extremely important to us. And, you know, typically we go through our system and guys, we either feel, you know, one way or the other, and guys that, you know, we're not interested in is one category. And then guys that we feel really good about, we know this guy, it's not going to do us any good. You know, we don't deal with those guys, but then you have a handful of guys that you don't, when you're at the combine, you felt like that 15 minutes just wasn't enough. and you wanted some more information. And then there's another series of guys you bring in that didn't get invited to the combine. So you kind of like them to some degree, but you have no medical on them whatsoever. So those guys have to come in because there's just no medical on them. So it's a combination of different combinations of reasons of why we bring guys in, but they're super beneficial for us.
Let's go next to Jesse.
Hey, Sid, I'll have a follow-up too. Hey, Brett, I just wanted, with Rasheed's kind of unknown status right now, how, if at all, does that change or affect your guys' draft and who you might take?
Yeah, I don't know if it does, just because I think we have a lot of needs. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, you go into every draft. I mean, you can look at our roster, and I think short of quarterback, you know, maybe linebacker. But I think there's needs on the offensive line for sure. I mean, you know, guard center depth, competition at left tackle, receiver, there's a need. Cornerback, we just lost Snead. We do have some good young guys. We do have Nazi Johnson coming back. But the corners are hard to find. You know, we could probably throw safety in there too, because I think we really like Shamari Connor and Cook and Reed. So, I mean, look, I think that it's one of those scenarios where I think there's a lot of positions that would make sense for us. And again, you start at the O-line, D-line and receiver position, but it's a long season and, you know, depth is super important to us. And also, you know, guys, contracts do run out. And, you know, I think anytime you get a player that you think can come in here and challenge for a starting position right away, I think you go in that direction.
Yeah, you kind of led me to this one. You know, situations change every year. A couple of years ago, you guys had lots of draft capital, you know, go up and get Trent McDuffie. How likely do you think a trade-up is this year, just given your overall depth and the draft capital that you have?
Yeah, it's just kind of, you know, weighing the options. And on one end, there's probably, you know, I think there's 16, 18 guys this year that we have as first-round grades. You factor in some quarterbacks there. So, you know, and then some maybe some teams that go in different directions that are contradictory to what our board has. So you figure 16 to 18 names, four quarterbacks, maybe five quarterbacks. I mean, there could be a window there where we have an opportunity to get a guy, and then just weighing, you know, the cost, because if it is a corner or an O lineman or, you know, receiver, you know, we're probably going to give up the opportunity to draft that other position later in the draft. So is, you know, one guy that you have a first round grade on better than two guys that you maybe have second, third round grades on? It's just kind of weighing that formula for us. And, you know, I think that's where it comes down to, just, you know, the value of that guy that falls. And if he's one of those guys that you really have as a top 10, top 12 pick, I think you up and do it, like Trent McDuffie's situation. I think if it's one of those guys, I think we'll certainly be aggressive, and hopefully we can find a trading partner. But I also think there's some depth in round two there. So, you know, I do think there's opportunities to add players that come in and push for starting positions in rounds two and three as well.
Let's go next to Nick Jacobs.
And Sydney, I'll have a quick follow-up. Brett, for you, rough estimate-wise, do you know how many guys you have on your board?
I wrote that down. I knew someone was going to ask me that. Because I never know. I just see a bunch of names up there.
Right.
I don't, like, count them. I sort of just move them around, and I have them in like, pockets. And but I was walking in here. I said, someone's going to ask me exactly how many guys I have on the board. So it's 221, which is a lot. But you'd have to come in here and be with me one day to see how I process this, because – like, I have guys in the sixth or seventh round on my board, but I always know that we'll never get to the sixth and seventh round. So the total number of boards, total number of players on the board, 221. But in my mind, there's kind of like a line right there. And those guys in six and seven, we keep on the board because that's where I want to work down on free agency. And so I know where I'm going. As soon as the draft's over, the guys that we had on the board at six and seven, again, we'll have plenty of numbers. We'll never get to them. But that's my free agency board, and that's kind of how we work through that.
And then my last question for you, each draft is unique, has a unique characteristic to it, like 83 having the five quarterbacks in the first round. I know a couple of years ago you thought there'd be a 1,000-yard rusher in the seventh round. For this draft class, what do you think it's gonna be remembered for down the road?
Well, gosh, that's a good question. I'm not sure what it will be remembered for. I think it, you know, obviously it'll depend on how these where these players go and how successful they are and what teams strategize to do different things. One interesting perspective that I did find kind of going through this is just the NIL effect So, you know, typically when you're working through the fourth, fifth, sixth round, there's always interesting prospects and small school guys. And but I think it's what you're starting to see is these fourth, fifth, sixth round prospects are a little older because they're staying. And some of these underclassmen that get third, fourth round grades, they have the opportunity to stay in school. And so I don't know if these drafts, and this will be a trend where they won't be as deep as they used to be. So, I mean, if you're a junior and you have a third or fourth round grade and you have an opportunity to stay in school and make money, you're going to go back, potentially stay in school. And so what happens is I think the drop off from rounds three, the cutoff line, I think the availability of young guys with potential that came out early, maybe they shouldn't, they would have stayed, they would have been a first or second round pick. Well, those guys are staying now. So I think the drop off numbers are a little bit more extreme this year, and the players are a little bit older. So we have to work a little bit harder to find some young guys with upside that we really like. That to me, I found challenging. And when we were going through the board, it was one of the things that I kind of like just instinctively thought. And then when I checked with our guys, they were like, yeah, these guys are a lot older. And, but again, you know, when you have a ton of underclassmen that put their name in and decide to come out, that makes every draft deeper. When guys are staying in, it's going to make every draft a little tougher to work with on the back end.
Let's go to Adam Teicher.
Hey, good morning, Brett.
Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Good, good. Hey, Dorsey would be appalled at you for having 221 names on your board.
Yes, too many.
Yeah.
We don't use them all. We just have them up there just for a free agency.
All right. I just wanted to get your expectations on a couple guys for this upcoming season, Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. What are your expectations for those guys for this year? And Sid, I'll have a second question as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, we obviously hoping both continue to improve, progress, and are able to be consistent playmakers for us. And you know, I know Kadarius has obviously had a long history of injury issues, but I mean, he is probably our most talented wideout. Now, again, it doesn't do anyone any good unless you stay healthy. But I mean, the kid has always worked hard here for us. And, you know, I know he's been down there with Pat, and I think it's just a matter of him staying healthy. And I think if he can do that, he can really do a lot of great things in this offense. And, you know, that's one of the things that there's a lot of speculation about KT, but I don't think that, you know, we ever stopped believing in him. And I think people around the building like him, and you know, it's the injury bug, and hopefully he gets some luck on his side and he can stay healthy and be the player that he was in Florida and the player that we've seen in spurts here. So just hoping he has a good off season and has a little luck on his side and can stay healthy. And with Sky, Sky's always been, you know, mentally tough kid, and, you know, he's still, he had that knee injury last year too. So, you know, to some degree, just these guys being on the field, staying healthy, and then, you know, making plays when their number's called. And the great thing about both these guys are they're two guys who really like as people, and they're smart guys and they work hard. Now it's just a matter of them putting themselves in position to earn consistent playing time and then make plays when their number's called.
Okay. And a similar question on Wanya Morris, just what you thought of him when he had to go in and play last year for those four or five games, and what is his readiness maybe to be an every down starting left tackle, if that's what you need him to be this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think we were really happy with Wanya's development last year, and I think he showed some signs early on in the OTAs that we were really excited about. Continue that growth and maturation process during the training camp. And then middle of the season there, he got an opportunity, some good, some bad. I think Wanya would tell you this. I think if you look at his body of work last year, I think on one end, you're happy that he was able to come in at the pro level and be competitive. It wasn't perfect, but it also was solid play that I think is a good foundation to build and grow on. but he has to come in here with the mindset that, you know, we're going to look to bring in competition, and, you know, he's got to come in here and win that position. And I think it's his job to come in and be prepared to win that position. And I think it's our job to go out there and find competition, you know, for that left tackle spot. So, you know, I think, again, I think that there's a lot of promise in there and there's a lot of ability. But certainly I think, you know, it's our job to bring in some competition there and make him earn that and work for that.
And we'll go last to Nate Taylor.
Brett, on the left tackle situation, how much do you prefer, or I guess has the organization, how much do you all prefer position flexibility, having a left tackle who could potentially play right tackle if necessary? And given it's a premium position, I guess how important is it to sort of find that next guy that can obviously play that position for multiple years, given you've had left tackles of different guys over the last couple of years?
Yeah, we put a lot of stock in flexibility. As you mentioned, Nate, you even saw that last game of the year when we played the O-line, coach had those guys playing different positions. You know, Creed played guard and, you know, the tackles swap positions and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, that just it kind of illustrates exactly what we think of positional flex and in-game situations. You never know if it's going to be a right guard, a left guard, a center, a right or left tackle that goes down. So, position flexibility does heavily weigh into it. You know, there's a lot of guys that are a lot of O-line coaches would tell you, if you can play tackle, you can potentially play any position across the board. So that, I think that's why tackle is so premium. It, you know, have to protect the quarterback's edge and the blind side, but also typically those tackles are athletic enough to slide inside and sometimes even play center. We saw that with Mitch Morse a few years ago. He was a tackle in college and he ended up being a really good center. So position flexibility is super important to us. And yeah, and you know, it is a quarterback league and you got to protect them and you got to get after them. And those tackle positions are always going to be important because they protect the most important player in your team. So if we get an opportunity to get one of those guys, for sure. I mean, you know, it's always on your mind, just like DN and DT. So again, hopefully the numbers work out and hopefully there's a window of opportunity for us, but I do think there's some really good players in rounds 2 and 3. So just need a little patience and a little luck, I guess.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Veach.
All right. So that was Chiefs General Manager Brett Veach speaking ahead of next week's draft, next Thursday night, first round of the NFL draft. A lot to react to there a little bit, especially the end. He was talking about the left tackles, what he had to say about the wide receiver crop in this year's draft. We'll react to a lot of that as we get started here on Cody and Gold.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, welcome in. It's Cody and Gold. A weird start to the show, obviously. We had the press conference there for about 25, 30 minutes. No, that would have been even weirder in the middle.
The way you just intro that, I thought, I was like, dang, I should have played it.
No, it's all good. It's a weird start to the show. Hope everybody's having a good Friday. We got a lot to address from what Brett Veach had to say. Pete Sweeney, our Chiefs insider, from Arrowhead Pride is going to join us coming up in about 20 minutes or so. Later on today, it's a Club 610 on a Friday, so Harold Kuntz of Fox 4 is going to stop by in studio. We also have what Cody is calling another slump buster.
That's correct.
At 12:30.
The title is Mikel.
Mikel, you are performing live or no?
I'm not performing live.
Okay.
It is recorded because after the video airs, there will be a video element.
Okay.
Posted on social media. But yeah, I think people are going to like it. I told you, I'm up to an 8. I'm officially up to an 8. As a matter of fact, I gave a few people a chance to preview it. One is Pete Sweeney. He's joining us at 11.
Is he your ghostwriter?
I have told him, he didn't write anything, but I have told him without giving anything about it away, at 11 o'clock, we would like you to give it a rating scale 1 out of 10. That way people can, you know, anticipate what they want at 12:30.
I saw Drew's tweet to you in response to the teaser. Drew thinks he's got it figured out, so.
There were a lot of guesses yesterday.
The way that you, the fact that you said the title is Mikel,
that's his name.
I think it kind of gave me an idea.
Okay, we'll see.
I did not go based on the picture because if you look at the picture that Dead Desmond drew, and then
that was my teaser photo,
and then my guess they didn't correlate. But
okay, so that's coming up at 12:30 today. I've not heard it. Drew has not heard it. We'll all hear it together coming up at 12:30. Let's get back to what Brett Veach had to say a little bit. And again, we'll have Pete Sweeney's reaction to it as well. Let's start with the left tackle conversation, because I still think that has a chance to be really interesting depending on what they decide to do in the first round and what that means for the rest of the offseason or ultimately when we're up in St. Joe for training camp. And he was asked about Wanya Morris, and I'll play just the snippet of Brett Veach being asked about the competition at left tackle and if Wanya basically is ready to start or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So I think we were really happy with Wanya's development last year, and I think he showed some signs early on in the OTAs that we were really excited about. Continue that growth and maturation process during the training camp. And then middle of the season there, he got an opportunity, some good, some bad. I think Wanya would tell you this. I think if you look at his body of work last year, I think on one end, you're happy that he was able to come in at the pro level and be competitive. It wasn't perfect, but it also was solid play that I think is a good foundation to build and grow on. But he has to come in here with the mindset that, you know, we're going to look to bring in competition. And, you know, he's got to come in here and win that position. And I think it's his job to come in and be prepared to win that position. And I think it's our job to go out there and find competition, you know, for that left tackle spot. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of promise in there and there's a lot of ability. But certainly I think, you know, it's our job to bring in some competition there and make him earn that and work for that.
All right. So they're going to go out and get competition, but is that in the draft or is that going to be what we've discussed, which
Donovan
is the same
Smithy level free agent,
the same path that we're sitting here in May and they decide to bring in a veteran left tackle. And then there's that competition. I think it's fair to say, and I understand you got to sift through stuff to make sure it's not smokescreen. I actually feel this is pretty real though, on the left tackle spot, that if they thought Wanya Morris was actually starting at left tackle, like they were just good with it, then I don't think we even be hearing him say we're bringing in competition or anything like that. I'm not telling you they're drafting a left tackle in the first round, guarantee or anything like that, but I think it's pretty clear, like, they haven't seen enough, and who could blame them, for Wanya Morris just to go into camp and be the guy.
No, and I don't think that that's crazy. They took him in the third round. He didn't start over an aging veteran. He had the job for 4 games, and they went back to said, I would say average playing veteran. Donovan Smith wasn't like an unstoppable force before the injury. Then Wanya came in and they still went back to Donovan Smith. The question really is what level of competition? Because you're right. If they take a first round, I don't think it's Wanya's job to win. It's definitely that guy's job, just total across the board. If it's in the second round, I think it's probably more the second round guy's job to lose. Third round or later, it's a straight up competition and you guys are doing battle. And may the best man win the left tackle job. But I also just think if it's third round or later, they're not taking a left tackle.
Right.
And they're going to just wait for free agency, find some random veteran. I still think like David Bakhtiari, because it's just like it's competition. And if he's healthy, you know Bakhtiari's winning. And if he's not healthy, you're like, well, at least Bakhtiari's around just in case, right? Like, I don't know if it'll be him, but I'm just guessing that if they don't take a left tackle in the first three rounds, based on the way they're talking, They're not going to take one, and they're just going to get a veteran left tackle and kick this can down the road another year.
I mean, hearing Veach at least, again, trying to understand that sometimes there's smokescreen, but mentioning the offensive line class overall in the draft. Now, there's some good tackles that we've mentioned how many offensive linemen go in the first round, but after that, maybe it's not as deep as we thought. So I'm with you. If they're going to find their long-term answer at left tackle, to me, it has to be in the first round. And you leave your options open because after the draft, you can sit here and say, oh, we actually feel good about the competition that we have, and we brought in a veteran or whatever to go with Wanya Morris. Or if they're at 32 or they trade up to 25, even though I think it's less likely they would trade up for a tackle.
The guy
that they viewed as a first-round grade, I mean, what did Veach say? 16 to 18 guys have first-round grades in their mind. Some of those are quarterbacks. So let's say there's 13, or 14 that are actually first-round graded players that they're eligible to draft, because we know they're not drafting a quarterback.
He said 14 to 16. But, yeah, as you said, four of those guys might be Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. Yeah. Presumably they have a first-round grade on Caleb Williams.
I would think so.
I did think it was interesting, the fact that he did say there's only good enough tackles that if you're at 35 or 40, they're not good anymore. So that makes me wonder, though, like if, say, a guy slips just a little bit and they think, hey, we really like Amarius Mims out of Georgia and they're at 25, mm-hmm. and we really think he can be the guy, would they actually trade up to 25 to draft a tackle if they think that once you get to 35 and 40, there's no use in taking one until the fourth round? Like if they really right. think that that's more of a premium position of need, I guess, then wide receiver, we'll find out.
But I also think it's harder to trade up for tackle than it is wide receiver in this draft in particular. Because unless you're going to 15 or 16, and you heard Brett Veach talk about that, he's like, look, I'd never rule it out. That's fun. And I'd have to talk to ownership. Ha ha. Because the amount of assets they have is not really the amount you would think a team's going up to 15 for, right? They're not like loaded with draft assets to the point that you're like, well, they're flying up the board. So it becomes very difficult to think the Chiefs can move up for a left tackle they view in that range. And if he's saying at 35 or 40, they're essentially not worth that, he's not ruling out taking a left tackle in the later second round or later third round. He's just telling you that, like, maybe Suamataia isn't worth pick 32, so they'd rather be taking a different position. You know, like, they'd rather be somewhere else in the draft.
I mean, he emphasized what everybody's kind of known, which is that, you know, the most pressing needs, offensive lineman, wide receiver, and, you know, a defensive line. Like, those seem to be the most likely, as everybody would agree, picks for this team. And he mentioned that maybe it's a better defensive line class than we realized.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. Like, hey,
I told you, I'm always fine with defensive linemen,
you know, second, third rounds. And in the NIL effect is what he brought up. I thought that was kind of intriguing, just to hear how maybe that could alter the back end of the draft a little bit. He said, you know, you've got guys that would have normally come out of college earlier that were projected to be fourth rounders that are underclassmen that are staying in college because there's NIL money. We've mentioned that more on the basketball front, I think, than the football front, but it's happening in football. And so if you've got, you know, the Chiefs have what, 7 picks right now, you've got multiple of those picks that are, you know, what you got a fifth, I think you got a fifth rounder, you got a seventh rounder as well.
Multiple seventh rounders, yeah. I think, but yeah.
Multiple or one?
Maybe
I think the one from the Titans, right?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the seventh. Anyway, point being just that
basically sixth.
Are they more likely, like most teams, to try to go in that, you know, third round or earlier range? Like, how many? It sounds like they agree there's a big drop off, which normally
he's not the first person agreeing to that, by the way.
Right. And like, I think everybody would say every year that, well, duh, the guy in the second round is going to be different than the guy in the fourth. But it sounds like there's a real drop off from third round to fourth and fifth more than normal.
Yeah.
And so does that change your thought process on do you stockpile more picks in the second round? Like, I actually, listening to the whole thing, I wonder if trading back out of the first round is a real possibility to get more picks in that second or third round.
I mean, I don't rule it out. But the problem is we're talking about this, right? There's probably other people who are thinking the same thing where they're like, man, the rest of this thing stinks. Like, we don't want anybody in the fifth through seventh rounds. And what's tough for the Chiefs is they've made a lot of hay in those drafts, man. Those rounds, Trey Smith in the sixth, Pacheco in the seventh, Snead in the fourth, like, they've made some real noise fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round a number of times. Jalen Watson, I can go on and on and on. They've had plenty of success under Brett Veach in those rounds. So for him to be like, well, it ain't all that good down there, I don't think he's wrong. I think what he's describing is exactly what's happening. All of the guys you'd be taking in the seventh round are like 26. They're like Brandon, like, are like 26-year-old, 7-year seniors. And you're like, I mean, I'll bring him. I'll pick him up because we got to pick somebody, but I'm not excited about it. And those guys who are projected to be fourth round juniors, fifth round juniors are like, whatever. I got NIL money. I don't need the cash right now. I'll go back to college, collect my 75 grand and hope to move up to the third.
The other thing he was asked about, the same question we've been throwing around the last couple of weeks, which is, does the Rashee Rice situation change how you approach the draft? I think you and I said that, you know, if you were going to take a wide receiver in the first round, then obviously you still feel like that's real. I don't think you're desperate. And this is what Brett Veach had to say when he was asked if Rashee Rice's legal situation impacts how they're going to draft.
Yeah, I don't know if it does, just because I think we have a lot of needs. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, you go into every draft. I mean, you can look at our roster, and I think short of quarterback, you know, maybe linebacker. But I think that there's needs on the offensive line for sure. I mean, you know, guard center depth, competition at left tackle, receiver, there's a need. Cornerback, we just lost Snead. We do have some good young guys. We do have Nazi Johnson coming back. But the corners are hard to find. You know, we could probably throw safety in there too, because I think we really like Shamari Connor and Cook and Reed. So, I mean, look, I think that it's one of those scenarios where I think there's a lot of positions that would make sense for us. And again, you start at the O-line, D-line and receiver position, but, it's a long season and, you know, depth is super important to us. And also, you know, guys, contracts do run out. And, you know, I think anytime you get a player that you think can come in here and challenge for a starting position right away, I think you go in that direction.
So that was Brett Veach when he was asked about Rashee Rice's situation potentially impacting the draft. Like, if they draft a wide receiver at 32 or they trade up and like,
it doesn't mean it's because of Rice.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm with you there. It's like, oh, that must mean they're really concerned. No, I think they just like the wide receiver. And I think wide receiver has always been in play in the first round. I don't think, you know, if you were to break down, and next week we can take a look at some of the betting markets for it, but like, if you were to break down percentage chance, you think it's wide receiver, percentage chance, you think it's offensive lineman or defensive lineman, I think the majority of that pie would be wide receiver still for me. You know, I don't know anybody that probably wouldn't have that being the case, like the majority. I think offensive tackle is pretty close behind the likelihood of it being the first round pick, but I would still say the favorite is wide receiver.
I think probably more telling in that is the positions he's saying we don't have today. Mm-hmm. We don't have needs at safety. We don't have needs at quarterback. We don't, you know, like, he's telling you the positions in which it ain't ever going to be those. We're fine there, and it's not going to be those. It's not going to be safety. It's not going to be, you know, like, if it's
safety, corner, running back, quarterback, linebacker were the five I think that I heard.
By the way, 100% agreed on corner. I don't know how many times we've watched them, and look, maybe just lying, and he's loved some corner. I'll say all this with a little bit of grain of salt. He definitely could be lying. Mm-hmm. But I agree with him on corner and linebacker. Spending a first or a second or third, like spending a first or a second specifically on those positions would be irresponsible. You're too loaded at those positions and it have already invested too many assets. Like, I get it. They just gave up L'Jarius Sneed. They have the number one corner in football, maybe, or at least a top three corner in football still, and Watson and Williams, and, you know, like, and he's talking about loving Shamari Connor. Like, they have a really good secondary, even without L'Jarius Sneed. And the last time they let go of a really good corner, it did not impact their play at all.
It didn't, but you're right. I mean, we've seen this play out with plenty of GMs, though, where they're like, oh, we feel great about this position. And
with pick 32,
Chiefs select corner blank out of blank state. Like, and you're like, okay, well, and then you're like, I thought you guys felt, oh, you know, we just couldn't, you know, we didn't think he was going to be there. We were thrilled that he was there for us at 32. We had to go get him. You know, that very likely could be a scenario that still plays out on Thursday night.
Yeah. Yeah. No, very well. I mean, but the problem is, I agree. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I agree with his assessment of the positions that I do not think that there's a firm need. Doesn't mean you can't take a safety in the third or fourth. Doesn't mean you can't take a linebacker in the fourth, you know, like, but we're talking premium picks. That's not the positions I would be targeting if I were the Chiefs. And also, I always think best player available is like a little, like, I'm not saying you can't take the best player available if there is a notable drop off, but if the best player available at 32 is a running back, I don't care.
Right.
It doesn't matter. They would have to be like Adrian Peterson at 32 for me to be like, okay, fine.
Yeah, best player available of your four needs, maybe. You know, like if you're good with recognizing that wide receiver, offensive lineman, defensive lineman, and whatever other position you would throw in there, and the best available of that pit, you know, of that bunch. Okay, that's a different scenario. And as he brought up, I mean, and we know with the you mentioned McDuffie. That if there's a guy that they thought was going to be a top 15 pick and he's there at 23, that's how you get into the, we might have to trade out.
We don't have a choice here.
Right. And that's what makes this all fun. We'll talk more about this with Pete Sweeney. He's going to join us coming up next. You heard him during that press conference. What did he take away the most from what Brett Veach had to say?
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.